This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk, and I'm here in studio with Charlie Deist. He is a volunteer for the San Francisco Saline Science Center. Charlie, tell us a little bit about what fascinates you about saline and science and why you volunteer.
Well, first it was the sailing. The science was the area that I felt like I had the most room for improvement. I'm a media guy myself. I've been producing radio and podcasts for several years. So when I met Jim, I saw two opportunities. One was to use some of my skills in that department, but also to bolster some of my own knowledge and resources around the science of this activity that I've come to really love as my primary hobby and also an avocation.
Jim, you're referring to is James Hancock, who's the founder of the San Francisco Saline Science Center. Tell me a little bit about your own sailing experience. I know you have a couple of boats. You're out there on the water a lot. You teach, you sail, you just really enjoy the water. What is it about the nature and the physics of nature that really fascinates you the most when you're in the sailor role?
Well, I was a beginner not too long ago. About 10 years ago, in my early 20s, I started sailing. And as most beginners to the sport of sailing, I had my fair share of missteps and was humbled by San Francisco Bay more than a few times. But eventually, with practice and just taking every opportunity that I could to get out on my own boats, on other people's boats, I started to get my bearings. And you get this sort of intuitive sense of how the waves and the wind interact. But having a scientific understanding of it, I think, just kind of takes it to the next level. The day that I first met Jim and learned about the Sailing Science Center, I had sailed over from Berkeley on my Columbia 24 to the St. Francis Yacht Club, which hosts their Wednesday yachting luncheons. I think that was a typical summer day in San Francisco, so winds blowing 20 knots or so. Fortunately, I think that it was flooding at the time. When the westerly winds clash with the ebb tide, it can lead to a pretty nasty surf there. But it was a good day for sailing, and it turned out to be a good day for my own kind of personal development.
Well, and for those who know anything about the moon and tides, we have a flood and an ebb twice a day. Floods coming through the Golden Gate right there in St. Francis Yacht Club.
It's kind of a funny balance because the flood, on the one hand, it creates better conditions when combined with the westerly winds. Although if you're trying to get from Berkeley heading east toward against the flood, basically, it slows you down. So there's all these trade-offs. And learning to sort of sync up with the tides and currents, I think, has also been almost a spiritual thing for me. It's a way to connect to nature on a level that most people just aren't used to thinking about.
I really appreciate you coming and sharing your story with us, and hope to have you back, Charlie. Thank you so much. This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk.
Welcome back to Sports Byline USA, coast to coast, border to border, and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. As always, on Tuesdays at this time, we check in with our co-host of this segment, Karen Lyle, for SalesportTalk.com, as we get out there on the seven seas once again. Karen in studio, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's so good to see you, Rick.
Good to see you in the flesh as well. And also in studio, we're quite happy to have James Hancock, and he is the president and founder of the San Francisco Sailing Science Center, located on Treasure Island. James, welcome in studio. And first of all, Treasure Island has been going through so many changes. I used to go there as a kid when my dad was a naval officer to, get breakfast and pancakes and things. And then it went through kind of a phase where it was a little bit stagnant. And now they're just like raising everything. It's a real renaissance going on there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, Rick. And, that's been in development for more than 20 years now, since they shut down the Navy base in 1997. So what's been happening is there's been a lot of planning in the background, and now finally they're starting to move dirt. And I say finally, it's been a few years, but they've gotten to the vertical development where they're putting in new buildings. They're still working on some of the horizontal development, the water mains, the electricity, and so forth.
Jim, I know that you are a sailor and you've been doing sailing all around the world. Can you tell us a little bit about why you feel sailing science is so important and what your passion for this new project is that's going into Treasure Island?
Well, some of it goes back to my own background, which you know, I started as a sailor and sailing as a teenager, and I developed a love for that. But also, you know, I grew up with a dad who's an engineer. So I wanted to be an engineer and wanted to be a sailor. And I studied naval architecture and marine engineering in college. And they do go very well together, the science of the sailing. And it goes a lot beyond just what people think of the science of sailing, which is the fluid flow, you know, the hydrodynamics and aerodynamics of the sail and so forth. But I think that, you know, as an activity, it's both challenging and fun, but also very educational in a lot of ways.
You mentioned the science of it, and that's what I was thinking, you know, dual hull versus single hull and things like that. And now we see with the SailGP where they're literally coming out of the water and on foils. What are some of the latest breakthroughs and trends that you're seeing with all that?
Well, I think that some of the things that are really interesting are, of course, the material sciences, because a lot of the theory for this has been around for, you know, decades or actually 100 years or more, but we couldn't actually do it because we didn't have the material to do it. Now with carbon fiber and things like that, we can make these foils that are small enough and strong enough to do what you're seeing. So that area is interesting. My own personal area of highest interest is the human factors and how we interact with the boats. At the highest levels of sailing, like the America's Cup, these guys are, you know, world-class athletes. And that's, you know, that's one of the things we have to understand, that you have to have very fast reaction times. You've got to have really good cardio. It's also very much a mental game. Like if you looked at the 2013 America's Cup, when Team New Zealand nearly capsized, and Dean Barker was the skipper then, and he got totally rattled by that, right? He was never able to race again after that. That was game over for him, and that was entirely a mental thing.
Hmm. Well, and thinking about a Sailing Science Center, you have exhibits in there. Have you started to plan any of these exhibits? Do you have an example of something that, you know, because this is for the general public and for kids as well?
Yeah, great question, Karen. So where we are right now, the plan, let's start with the long-term vision, which is in, let's say, 5 to 7 years, and I can give you a reason for that, but in 5 to 7 years that we're a world-class museum with 200 to 300 exhibits. Right now, we have 7 exhibits and a trailer. And, you know, the first exhibit that we did, we called the Land Yacht Experiment Table, and it consists of a table with, start out with one fan at the end. Now it has 15 computer fans and little cars with sails on them. And the cars sail upwind, which is counterintuitive for most people. It's like, well, they get how something will blow downwind, but what makes it go toward the wind? And, you know, so this is part of the magic, I think, of sailing, is that you can produce these unexpected results.
Couple more questions for James Hancock of the San Francisco Sailing Science Center. Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with you. Sailing is as old as human history, and yet it's also cutting edge, as we said. But I remember in my house on the wall, we had the John Masefield poem there. I must go down to the seas again, lonely sea in the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by, and it goes on. But how much can you still rely on astronomy to navigate?
Well, you know, we're putting up our own astronomy these days in the form of GPS satellites. So if the question is, can we still navigate with celestial navigation, the answer is absolutely yes. You know, and I studied celestial navigation, and I used it really more for fun and as, okay, if we get struck by lightning and all the electronics go out, it would be nice to still get home, right? And I... You know, I was able on a trip back from Hawaii to consistently get our latitude within one minute of latitude, which is 1 nautical mile.
Wow.
Well, that's easily good enough to get you to the Golden Gate, right? If you know what your latitude is. So, and you don't even need a chronometer for that, right? You don't even need a timepiece. So it's still a viable technology, but nobody's really using it.
Jim, one of the things you said you're interested in is the human factor, and I'm also interested in the human factor. I'd like to know, have you ever had a life-changing, defining moment out there, you know, in in the ocean, in the water, on a boat that just really impacted you in some way? And if so, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, you know, the most transformational moment I had was on a passage that my wife, now ex-wife, and I made from New Zealand to Tonga. And we got caught in about 4 or 5 days of gales. The worst conditions were roughly 50 knots of wind and 25 to 30 foot breaking waves. Every single one of them was breaking. And we nearly pitch pulled at one point. And we were hove to in the afternoon. That means the boat was stopped. It was balanced under sail. And she says, you know, I don't want to die out here. And as the skipper, captain of the boat, just the two of us on the boat, I reassured her, said, hey, we got new rigging. Everything's in good shape. It's just going to be miserable for a while. But what I was saying in my heart was, I don't want to die out here either. And it was, you know, that was a real possibility. And like I came out of that really transformed and having more gratitude for my life, mm-hmm. and also seeing a lot of things that we get stressed out about in our day-to-day lives as being much less significant. When you are in a position, and even just, you know, in more, I'll say, day-to-day cruising or, you know, ocean sailing, you have situations where the decisions that you make actually do have life or death consequences. And most of the decisions we make in our day-to-day lives don't have those kinds of consequences, but we react emotionally as though they do. And so being able to get that context, and I don't wish that kind of experience on anybody, but at the same time, it was, I would say, the most valuable experience I've had in my life.
Thank you for sharing that.
That's really cool. On your business card you gave us, one of the little symbols is of the sextant. And this is, I'm a bit of a neophyte. How does the sextant work, you know, in principle?
Yeah, great question, Rick. So the idea is that as we're standing on or floating on the surface of the Earth, that we have celestial bodies above us. And if you were to use gravity as a, you know, a vector toward that body, which could be the sun or the moon or Venus or whatever, will have what's called a geographic position. In other words, it's directly above a particular place on the Earth. Hmm. And if you use the sextant, you can measure the angle from where you are to that celestial body. That gives you what's called a circle of position. Okay, so it's like this cone that you drew out from the geographic position of the celestial body. So now you've got one, I'm going to call it a line, but it's a curved line, a circle of position on the globe. If you can get a second one of those that crosses, now you know where you are.
Hmm. And you need charts, though, right?
You need charts, and you also typically you need an almanac so that you can decipher what is the geographic position of that body at that time. And then typically you need a chronometer, although there's things you can do with the sun to get the latitude without having a chronometer.
I might mention that I was at the gala fundraiser for the Sailing Science Center. Thank you for inviting me. And that your honored guest, John Arndt, who is the publisher of Latitude 38, is our sponsor for this segment. And so we want to certainly thank him for being our advertising sponsor for this. But this is one of the things about the sailing community. People really lend a helping hand in every way and really reach out. You know, people have more than one role, that's for sure.
Do you have a sort of a holy grail destination or craft that you would like to master?
Craft. Well, that's an interesting. So there's two questions there, destination and craft. But mm-hmm. I think mastery is elusive. That, you know, I think we really always want to be students. And so we're mastering things, but I don't know about ever mastering things. And if it's one thing, it would be leadership, you know, above sailing. And I continue to be interested in sailing and science and these other things. But I think that, you know, as a world community, we have the biggest challenges we've ever faced. I think that that's, you know, very arguable as, you know, humankind on the planet. But at the same time, we have the best tools for solving those challenges that we've ever had. And I do believe that it's technical challenges that we've created for ourselves will be solved by technical solutions, science and engineering. But we also have social issues that we have to deal with, and those will be solved through good leadership.
Very interesting. I want to recommend everybody check out the website, sailingscience.org. Once again, sailingscience.org. And we've been speaking with the president and founder of the San Francisco Sailing Science Center, James Hancock, in studio. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been fascinating.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rick. Really enjoyed it. And good talking to you and Karen.
Thank you so much. And Latitude 38 is also a great place to check out our sponsor.
Latitude38.com. Check it out. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break and we'll come on back on Sports Byline.